Well, hello and welcome to another week, folks. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here at The Boundless Show, and I'm joined by Martha. Hey, Martha.
Hi, Lisa.
Just two of us today.
It's a little scary. We got all these empty chairs. It is.
There's a vast expanse between us. Well, Martha's sitting over there because that way she doesn't have to get a crick in her neck from turning, which she's very gracious and usually doing when we have other guests.
Which they don't know what you're talking about. But
yeah. Our table, you know, we're kind of like, you can't really see everyone. You have to speak straight into the mic. So anyway, it's a tricky business. Let me tell you a little bit about our show today. Later on in the show, we have one of our counselors, Danny Huerta, in the studio to answer a question from a couple that are wondering or worrying, I guess. Really, they're a little bit concerned that they may be setting each other up on a pedestal and putting each other before their relationship with God, really. And so he's going to address that. And then our culture segment, I'm very excited to say that we have Kevin DeYoung actually here in the studio. You know him as the author of Just Do Something, which we stump pretty often here on the show, as well as he's made a number of responses through the Gospel Coalition and through his own blog on some current issues in the Christian world. So you will definitely want to stay tuned for that one. But as promised, many of you, I don't know, maybe you guys have forgotten this at this point. A while back, earlier on the front end of the summer, we conducted a survey about this podcast. We figured it was time to maybe find out if anyone was listening. And so we did. We put the survey out there, and many, many of you took it. And it was a great opportunity for us to look at the show and your feedback and take that all into consideration. We had a fantastic research team that put this all together for us and helped us devise the questions. And then Martha and I have culled through the results, and we are here today to share them with you. And Martha, I'm going to actually have you kick this off with kind of a look at who our audience is, because that was a great finding for us and something that, you know, maybe some of it was surprising and some not. But what did we find out there?
Well, we actually had 530 people take the survey, so mm-hmm. we were really excited about that response. And it turns out 75% are female.
Oh, shocker.
Shocker, yes. So that is something we want to improve on, is getting some more guys to listen. But yes. As far as age, most are 23 to 27 years old, and next followed by 28 to 32. So that's about 66% of our audience. That's mm-hmm. 23 to 32. And we do have 7 people that are 55 or older.
Wow.
So got to give them a little shout out.
Hey.
One of them is my mom, I think.
And definitely not my mom, because she still doesn't know that I host a podcast. But yeah. How'd you said 7?
Yep, 7 people.
Thank you, 7 people.
So another interesting thing is 73% are white or Caucasian, which is actually a little bit less than the normal Focus on the Family stat of about 80 to 85% being Caucasian.
Yeah.
So we have a pretty good diverse audience.
Yeah, that's good. We want to improve that too, though. And I think a lot of that is helped by our international audience. So those of you who are listening internationally, please tell your friends, because we love that.
Yes, 23% of our audience is international, mostly from Canada, but also from Australia, United Kingdom, New Zealand, Philippines, South Africa, Jamaica, India, Malaysia, Austria, Japan, Brazil, Germany, Nigeria, and China.
Wow. So, of the respondents we had. We're sure that if you didn't do the survey, you're out there, whatever. But, you know, you should have taken the survey, and then you would have been on our list, too.
Yeah. We also found it encouraging that 88% of our international respondents said that they thought our programming was relevant to them outside of the U.S.
That's good.
I thought.
Yeah. When I've talked to, and we'd love to hear from you all as to how we could even improve that. You know, I know when we've had some of our international friends visit us here, sometimes they'll say, hey, the way that we do college in our country is different, or the way we do an internship program is different. And so maybe that's a little bit of a disconnect. Sometimes a little bit different little tweaks in the realm of dating and stuff like that. But if there's anything that you feel is like a hole that we're not addressing, please do let us know.
Yeah, because we really don't know.
Yeah,
so don't. Email us.
We don't.
Try to cover those things. One other surprising thing was for people's theological view, only 46% of our audience said they're fiscal and social conservatives.
Mm-hmm. Which is pretty much very off the focus norm, I would
say. Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting.
So
very good.
That's some of the highlights.
Excellent. Well, we also want to delve in. Another big portion of the survey was what people like about the podcast and what people think could be improved. And we got a lot of great feedback that the part I liked about this was it was actually a qualitative section. So people could mm-hmm. really just type in their actual responses and what they actually feel. And we had probably, I would say, the things that people liked the most trended towards either specific segments. Like a lot of people love the round table, and they love, and most of the comments surrounding the round table were, I like the fact that it's real. I like that it's real people who are sharing from their own experience. I feel like I'm sitting in someone's living room, which we've said from the get-go is kind of our goal, to just have it be, you know, boots on the ground. What really are you dealing with right now? So a lot of people commented about that, as well as other likes would be the variety of topics that we have, the relevance of the topics to singles. And we've tried to even pick that up, I think, a little bit more with Martha's producing work. She's able to turn something around pretty quickly when we hear of something happening, you know, in the culture or in the church or just something that singles are dealing with. We see a news story, we're like, hey, that would be fun to discuss. And so a lot of people just generally shared. I thought this was interesting how, you know, it's just great that there's a show out here for Christian singles, because mm-hmm. it's really something that a lot of people, I think, have looked for and found, you know. And one person actually said, episodes 163 and 167, they're what got me hooked on Boundless.
Oh,
and I,
wow.
I went back and looked at them, and they were the ones specifically on dealing with being single and okay. how to, yeah, one was our Living La Vida Sola and just kind of wrestling with that. And so that was very good.
Especially for people who've grown up with Focus on the Family, mm-hmm. I think they're encouraged to see, oh, they have something for singles and young adults. I don't mm-hmm. have to listen to the Daily Broadcast, or I don't have to listen to Adventures in Odyssey, or
right,
there's something for them too.
Kind of that bridge, and the fact that we're a little bit, you know, a little bit different probably from what people would expect if they did grow up on Focus.
We have that's true. We have our own flavor.
A little bit of an edge sometimes. So then we actually took, you know, we had the qualitative section too for what you thought could be improved. And we probably the biggest comment, and I don't know if we found this surprising, but one of the biggest things that folks thought were surrounding the music in the show, either the music itself, like commenting on, oh, between segments, have it shorter, have it longer. And then the recommendation that for most people, really us interviewing musicians doesn't resonate with them. And we figure that's probably something they can get elsewhere.
Yeah, that's true.
Even though I've noticed, I think after my first few interviews with bands and stuff like that, I kind of was like, you know, what's kind of the stuff that maybe they don't get asked a lot? So I would always delve into mm-hmm. their personal lives, and then I would get big deer in the headlights. They're like, whoa, we're not prepared.
Did you really just ask that?
Yeah, exactly. We wanted to talk about our latest album. And so I always do. But so speaking of that, there were a few things that we're probably going to trend away from based on your feedback, or trend toward. One of the other big aspects of feedback was appreciating when we have especially a bigger percentage of male voices on the show, even to the point of when we've had one of the guys come in and guest host. And so a lot of people like that, and especially you guys out there want us to do more of that, and so we're definitely looking at that. I know I'm not personally offended, whatever.
And we've already had a few guys on the show already. Of
yes.
Leon was talking about spiritual, or being a leader in your home, of how mm-hmm. to prepare for that, and yep. Travis.
And we just had Nathan Pyle do a culture segment for us, so that was great to have him step into that. So yeah, we hear you guys, and we're definitely going to try to get more all-guy roundtables, get their perspective as well. We also had several of you recommend that we do bring in our bloggers more frequently and have them as roundtables. So hopefully you all know that we have done that a couple times. And if you want to look up those shows, you can certainly do that, including the most recent one where they talked about kind of what some of their ideas are for upcoming blog posts. So mm-hmm. we will hopefully be seeing some of those on the blog itself. And
boundlessline.org.
Yes, boundlessline.org. Recommendation also for more diversity, which we find a little bit difficult in Colorado Springs. So where that's going to be reflected most is going to be in our culture segment, because there we can go when we're looking for the folks that we do interview. And because we have the luxury of doing that by phone, we can get a great, you know, kind of cut from a great swath of folks. For the roundtable, we often pull people locally because we're all here in the room. But it's kind of hard. It's funny. You realize, oh, yeah, we're an audio show. So it's not like you can really convey, you know, diversity all the time. But people will share.
Well, and like you mentioned earlier, sometimes we're just not aware of the issues mm-hmm. that we're not touching.
Right.
You know, so if people let us know if they have a question, you know, we can include that in the inbox, or, you know, work on finding a guest that can help
exactly.
address that.
Exactly. Martha, why don't you talk a little bit about one of the other recommendations we had surrounding controversy? I thought that was funny.
Yeah, people want more controversy. I feel like we're pretty controversial.
Not controversial enough.
Exactly. Yeah. One of the questions actually talked about, you know, whether being more serious or more fun. And for the most part, it was about in the middle. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a little bit more serious, perhaps. Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll just have to dig a little deeper to find those kind of topics we haven't covered yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we're getting some good suggestions, too. In fact, I got on Facebook, one of the listeners emailed me the other day in light of the, again, here in the States, shootings near the Empire State Building. And he's like, so really, why do you guys defend, you know, the ownership of guns among the people? I don't really understand that. And I would love to see a spirited debate on that. So we're going to find our NRA members and the people
that
want to stand up against them and maybe have a great discussion about that and other things about around reproductive rights and what are the ethics surrounding that. So stay tuned for those in the future. Okay, well, perhaps one of the scarier portions of the survey for me was an open-ended question about how people feel about me as host. And make sure that you catch our behind-the-scenes show that's going to be coming up next week, because I'll tell a little bit of my story of how I even got involved in this crazy show, which I think will be eye-opening for some of you. So it's 4.5 years running now, so this has been fun. But we got a lot of responses, a lot of feedback about me, and Martha is going to go ahead and summarize that.
Well, I'd say the overall theme is that people don't just like Lisa, they love Lisa. She actually got a marriage proposal within the comments left on this portion.
I need to follow up on that.
You should. Well, unfortunately, I think the person was 18.
Oh.
So that was a little strange.
In a year. I'll give him a year. Yeah. It's cool.
Another person said Lisa should be the next Bachelorette. So they'd like to see some more of you on ABC, I guess.
Oh, I should. I should call them. Yeah. So I can get in there. That'd be great.
Put in your application, at least.
Yes.
One comment said, Lisa and Boundless go together like Santa and his reindeer. I guess two are a package deal. So,
oh, dear.
Yeah. Oh. And we even got really, people are serious about this. One person said, if you ever get rid of her, I'll never speak of to any of you again.
Oh.
And then someone said, keep Lisa till she dies.
Oh. That must have been. Even though none of them listen either, I don't think. I can't get any of my family to listen. Well, that's not true. Some of my family does. My friends do.
Well, they should
feel
be.
Obligated. Oh, yeah. Keep me till I die.
Yes.
I noticed that because it was so cute, because one of my friends was, all of our survey results, again, thanks to our research team, were provided online for us, and we could go to a link and like follow stuff as it was coming in. And I was at my friend's house one day and I was showing her how the survey worked and stuff like that, and showed her that section. And I went off and did something, and I didn't notice that she stayed there and was reading through all of them. And she said, Lisa, you need to just print out this whole section and put it up in your cubicle for when you get discouraged, or when you guys get, you know, naysayers and stuff like that, because it was really encouraging. And I think, you know, and I'll talk about this more next week, but one of the things that I love about Boundless is that I feel like I'm learning alongside everyone else. As I, you know, when I'm talking to someone, I'm doing an interview, I'm like, wow, I haven't heard that before. This applies to me too. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm just in the fray with all of you. And that's something that's really important to me.
Yeah, that definitely came through on the comments too, of people appreciating your authenticity and feeling like you're a friend on the other side of the speaker. So that was good. There was a couple comments of people noticing that you say the fray every episode.
I do.
People are counting.
I do. So. I say, yeah, there are some things that I just say. It's so funny because I'm like, wow, I guess I must really talk like that, because we're so conversational that I don't edit myself, and I don't usually, you know, we just kind of run with it and stuff. Go. And so when I do, and I don't often listen back to shows too often. Usually once it's out of the can, it's just good to go. But the times when I have listened again, I'm like, wow, that bugs me. I'm like, that really, I need to work on that, or other phrases. Yeah. Other phrases as well. So
maybe just to keep things balanced, there was also just constructive criticism, too, of, you know, being careful about rabbit trails, or guys or people just wanting to have a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Can't really help that. But
I'll work on that. I'll change that. That's fine.
No, please don't. Yeah.
No, I won't.
Or maybe some people just not quite understanding your humor, but other people loving your humor. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I noticed that there were some people that were like, I think, yeah, some people don't get it. They were like, so there's some singing. I don't understand what that's about. Yeah. And other people are like, don't stop singing. And so you get kind of get it from both sides. And people, think I'm just weird.
To wrap up, I just have one more comment I want to read for you. It stood out to me because there's a spelling error, or I'd like to think there's a spelling error in it, but it says, love her. She's the best part of the shower. It wouldn't be the same without her.
Wow.
I think they meant show. I really hope they meant show, but
I hope so.
Best part of the shower.
Because there are only a few, I mean, there were a few boundless listeners that I've showered with, but not, you know, not many. I try to keep it. No.
They might listen.
Maybe
while
they listen
in the shower.
In the shower.
I don't know.
Oh, that would be fun. That'd be good. So, well, that was very sweet of those of you who weighed in. And I did remember, you know, it was so funny because as I read the ones where people gave suggestions, it was like, I don't think there was one thing that I disagreed with. Like every single one, I was like, oh yeah, already working on that.
Yeah.
Need to be reminded of that. You know, blah, blah, blah. So
I'll just say Lisa has a tough job, people. I mean, just the variety of people that are in the studio week after week and many of them unprofessionals. And she has to keep it together and keep it moving. It really is a hard thing that she does.
That's true. I do need a raise just for the roundtable section of this when I am literally like herding cats sometimes. You know, sometimes someone will come in here and they're just terrified. They've never been in front of a mic before. And other times people don't really have their thoughts together. So they just kind of go off on something. And I'm like, wow, okay, that wasn't even my question. So sometimes those are like the interview people, authors and stuff too. But it's always a lot of fun. And Martha's great too. She just provides a great perspective, of course, as you all know, and is always prepared. And I have a lot of fun with her when she gets to join us, which is most of the time usually, so that's good. Okay, well, we're just going to close out here with a couple other things. One thing I wanted to mention is that 67% of you listen to the show within the first 3 days, which I thought was fascinating, because a lot of times we'll hear people will email us and they'll say, oh, I haven't listened for a while, but I downloaded 20 episodes, you know, to my phone and I'm going on a road trip or something. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people that stack them all up and listen at once. But those of you that do listen that week, you get the benefit of actually getting the current info when we are talking about something current. So that is helpful. And then, of course, you get the feedback on the blog, which is usually hopping right after we do that. You should know now we have some cool things in the hopper. We are now on Stitcher. For those of you that have Stitcher downloaded on your phone or your tablet or elsewhere, make sure that you check that out. And actually, if you go to Boundless, you can access Stitcher through Boundless. We will have info up about that. We are also on One Place for those of you that follow One Place and everything that's up with Salem Communications. And then the other thing that was like a little bit discouraging is when we looked at how like other ways that you consume Boundless. Boundless podcast people are not very good at being elsewhere in Boundless, if I'm going to be honest. Okay. So we only have like 47% of you that like us, like our Facebook page. That's just rude. Okay. So we are here for you every week and we need you to like us on Facebook. And we want you to subscribe to our e-newsletter as well. So that is a great way. Martha really culls a lot of that info together. That is a great way to once a week get the entire roundup of what we have featured that's new. So if you don't want to have to be hopping around on your own and finding stuff.
Yeah, because beyond the podcast, we also have articles. We have Q&A, mm-hmm. kind of like the inbox on the podcast. We actually have an article form as well. And we have our blog that's updated usually once a day, if not more.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different stuff there. And of course, we're always posting something random. If you go on Facebook, that's where you're going to find like when we have when some of you visit us, we'll take a photo and throw it up on Facebook. We ask weird questions that we're not even sure why we're asking them and get people to weigh in on. So it's a lot of fun. So well, just in wrapping, I want to say thanks to all of you who did take the survey. Thanks to those of you who have listened now for 4.5 years. Some of you are new to the show, and that's very exciting as well. So we want you to continue to tell your friends. We want to thank you for being honest in this survey. It was really fantastic. And like I said, we're making some changes even as we speak. We will trend towards some of the things that you suggested. And continue to pray for us because we're in here every week and, you know, finding new people, finding new topics. And we want to do what is best for this show and what is most helpful for you and most glorifying to God. So thanks, everyone, for being part of that. Oh, clap your hands. All ye people, and shout. Well, hello, everyone. For today's culture segment, I am in the studio with Pastor Kevin DeYoung. Kevin, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Very good to have you. I like your red shirt. That's very feisty.
Yes, it's sort of to be intimidating.
Right. That's good, because I am often told that I'm intimidating, so it's that's good. That's I'm assuming one of the reasons I'm single, because all these guys are like, well, you're kind of intimidating, so yeah. I don't know what to do with that, so well, it's good that
don't
you're
wear
kind
red
of,
shirts.
Okay. Well,
you know.
Apparently, I'm trying not to. I'm just wearing black. I'm blending in today. So, okay, for those of you who don't know, and most of you do, because we hear a lot of you that send us, like, basically everything that Kevin DeYoung ever writes. You're like, did you see that he wrote this? Did you see that he, you know, posted this? Oh, my goodness. We saw it. We saw it. But anyway, he is the senior pastor at University Reformed Church in East Lansing, Michigan, and the author of a ton of stuff. We have hawked Just Do Something, I don't know, probably like a million times on the show, and
well,
we get a lot
you.
Of feedback about that. So, yeah, we need to track sales on that and see how much of it's attributed to the Boundless Show.
Well, yeah, and pay out some sort of royalties.
Appreciate getting some kind of kickback.
I just bought
on
something from the bookstore, so it all comes back
that's
to
good.
You, I'm sure.
It does, yeah. Boundless pretty much gets all of that.
Adventures in Odyssey, just...
Oh, right. Know. Well, you know, they're coming out with a whole... We just did, I mean... Big anniversary for them, and the new Oliver Twist Radio Theater is coming out as well.
Okay, well, so. We have a 20-hour drive back home, so we are just tanking up.
Be aware, be
end.
Aware.
Yes.
Okay, well, we are going to talk, everyone, you have to just like pay attention today, because I'm going to kind of go all over the map with Kevin, because when he's here in town, he has family here in town, they go to my church, I'm just saying, we have to nab him. And so, but the first thing I want to talk about is you have a book coming out, it may actually be...
Out.
Really simmering
yes,
right now, coming
right.
out of the publishing house and onto shelves even as we speak. It is called The Hole in Our Holiness. And for those of you that just dozed off as I gave that title, the fact is, Kevin, and you need to address this, there aren't a lot of people specifically in the young adult generation mm-hmm. sitting around saying, the one thing that I want to do right now is become more holy.
Right.
So why is that, and why do you feel that even has to be addressed?
I think there's a number of reasons. I'll try to be... brief, but I think you're right that there are a lot of things that seem more relevant, more exciting, more energizing than talking about holiness. I think there's a suspicion on some people's part that if you say that word, you just have in mind a few taboos about movies or cards or chewing mm-hmm. gum or something. Mm-hmm. And
well, it sounds a little arrogant to just say, I need to be more holy.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, even the way you just said that, that's how most mm-hmm. people say it.
It's my holiness
voice. Right. You never say, wow, you're holy. It's, mm-hmm. well, aren't you holy?
Right.
Are you holier than thou?
Right.
When you bring in the old King James language, it's not a compliment. Mm-hmm. So I think people are nervous that this is something from a bygone era. This makes me look judgmental. And, you know, with all of the resurgence of gospel-centered stuff, which I'm a part of, I love, I celebrate, I think people have struggled to see, now what does it mean? Okay, if we celebrate gospel and I'm so screwed up and God loves me anyways and it's all about his grace, which is true, what role is there for pursuing, for striving after holiness? And I think a lot of young people just get nervous and think, well, I'm going to be legalist or that's moralism and I can't talk about pursuing after holiness. And it's a big problem.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of dicey because we're so taught, and I know you talk about this in the book, to say, you know, it's all Christ, you know, everything, but you know, for the grace of God. And so the whole idea of striving at this point, especially for 20 and 30 somethings, is very foreign to us because we think of that as, oh my goodness, that's not okay. That is legalistic.
Right.
So how do we find that balance between really our responsibility to cultivate a heart that is trending towards holiness and really relying on the work of Christ in us?
I like the line from J.C. Ryle, his classic book, Holiness. If you're going to get one book, get his before you get mine. But, I mean, he said the Christian is known for two great marks, an inner warfare and an inner peace. And so we're at rest with God, but we're not at rest with our sin. And Hebrews 12:14 says, strive for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. So there is a progressive, practical holiness that we need to strive for. 2 Peter 1 tells us to make every effort. I think the answer to your question is really in 1 Corinthians 15:10, where Paul says, I work harder than all of them. He's talking about his ministry, but it could relate to just the Christian life. He says, I work really hard. And then he quickly says, yet not I, but the grace of God that works within me. So we need this category of a grace that not only saves us, but a grace that empowers us, a grace that transforms us, the grace that leads us home.
Mm-hmm. So really you're saying, I mean, I think a lot of people will say in light of this, okay, if holiness is not a sin management system, then what is it?
Yeah, I hear sin management. I know it comes from Dallas Willard, and it probably had a useful purpose in the day, but now I feel like it just kind of gets slapped on there, sort of like a legalist is someone who seems to be more concerned about holiness than I am. Mm-hmm. Now, legalism is a real problem if you're trying to earn your favor with God, earn your standing with God. But the fact of the matter is there are so many passages of Scripture that say not only does God care about holiness, but it's one of the reasons why he saved us, mm-hmm. that we might be holy. And I don't think our generation has a particular hatred for sin. I think we're really good about being authentic about our sin. Mm-hmm. But to hate our sin, to want to kill our sin, and I think we have this misguided notion that God, because we're justified, is completely indifferent, as if he can't be pleased with obedience and he can't be displeased with disobedience. And so we have just this very flattened relationship with God, as if, you know, justification just means he can't see anything else. Well, no, just like, you know, a child, you can completely love your child, they're accepted, they're secure, yet they can please you with their obedience, and they can be real scoundrels and grieve you. And I think that's the same way with our Heavenly Father.
Mm-hmm. So if we have, you know, a lot of people are going to be out there, maybe there are some new believers out here listening, and they're saying, you know, I became a Christian, and now I understand that I have a changed heart, but why don't I feel this amazing, you know, decision to be like, oh my goodness, I want to be holy. I want to be, why are we still fighting this if we're, you know, because they're like, I left that person that I was, you know, I thought I was going to be someone different, but now I'm just stuck in the same old stuff.
Uh-huh. Well, I think there are two different questions there. One, if someone's listening and they say, I am a Christian and I don't really have a desire to be any different, I don't have any sort of longing, I'm completely fine with the sin that I have in my life, then I'm not sure that person's a Christian. Mm-hmm. Now, the other type of person, which is all of us, you know, if you're really a Christian, you have a desire, you hear, you see Christ's likeness, you see what Jesus is like, you hear about the fruit of the Spirit, and you think, oh, I want to grow in that, but it is a struggle, it is a fight. And that's where we need to be encouraged. You know, Paul tells Timothy in 1 Timothy 4 that let others see your progress. So it's not so much where are we right now, but where are we going? What's our trajectory? Mm-hmm. And we're bound to fight against sin. I think sometimes people misunderstand what the Bible means by a new nature, or the old man and the new man, as if there's kind of a new material stuff in us. That's really talking about our new position in Christ. But as we have this position in Christ, it's the rest of our life to live out that reality that's been made true of us through faith. And so it's going to be a fight, and everything in Scripture tells us it's going to be a fight and a struggle, and you take two steps forward and you take one step back, but you measure your progress not by minutes and hours and days, but by months and years. And I think if we have that long-term perspective, it guards us against an unhealthy kind of introspection.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like there are some people, though, who historically have just, quote, done this better than we have. Okay, so I'm looking at, like, Stephen, you know, getting stoned. I mean, obviously, like, he just really, you know, so many people point to him as an example. Or, like, say, a George Mueller or an Eric Little. I mean, when we look at these people that were just, like, they drew the line in the sand as to what, you know, where they were going to put their standards, what that was going to look like. Mm-hmm. What does this look like for us today in the 21st century when, and I know you've had a lot to say on the world of entertainment and just our love of the world, whether it's a love of the world or it's just a concession to the world. What, I mean, a year from now, someone that hears this and says, okay, yeah, this is real. God's convicting me on this. What should be different a year from mm-hmm. now?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there. I think we need to have heroes. I think you see that in Hebrews 11, Hebrews 13. It's good to have heroes of the faith. It's good to have people look up to and say, you know what, I have things to learn from these people. At the same time, when you read Christian biography or you know great Christian leaders, you realize how we all have clay feet and nobody measures up to the standard of Jesus. So we're all in this progress of growing. You know, one of the things that's been helpful, I don't know if this answers the question, but I remember David Wells was one of my professors in seminary. It always stuck with me. His definition of worldliness He said, worldliness is whatever makes sin look normal and righteousness look strange. And if you notice during the Olympics, been on vacation, so I watched, you know, an ungodly amount of Olympics. And all those commercials for the NBC shows, and there's one, The New Normal. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's, you know, a gay couple and a single mom and whatever, whatever, whatever. And it's just right there, the new normal. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe people listening to this can easily spot that and say, well, that, yeah, that's not good. But it's all the things that we become blind to with the YouTube clips we take in, the entertainment we watch, the way we act as single people in dating relationships, that we've just become accustomed to a whole barrage of sensuality. I think if people were to sort of detox from some of this entertainment for a month and then come back to it, I think they'd see, kind of like I do, maybe you do, Lisa, I look back at some of the movies even I watched when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. I think, I watched that. Mm-hmm. I laughed at that. I thought Naked Gun was funny.
No, I couldn't watch them in high school, so I watched them since then.
Okay.
And I'm like, what is that about? Like, where did this rating system come from? Because that has all kinds of language and craziness.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. Okay, well, which is interesting because Martha and I heard you in Louisville back in February.
Yeah.
And you spoke there at SBTS. And one of the examples you gave is you said, you know, you would not walk through a park and see a couple making out on a park bench and just sit there and grab your popcorn and watch them. Yet we easily pay $10, $50, $11 to go and watch it on a big screen. So where are you seeing this disconnect in entertainment today? As far as, I mean, Christians that are going from Bible study to watching Magic Mike to, you know.
And, you know, with Facebook, you can spy on people and you can know what they're doing and,
oh, I know.
And what they like and what they're.
Sometimes I just comment. I'm like, where are you going?
Yeah, what is going on?
It's my ministry.
Well, it's a very good ministry. The hole in our holiness. Mm-hmm. You can be the conscience of. Right.
Exactly.
I just think people, we have become so numb to it, mm-hmm. desensitized. I really think, you know, it's not that other generations didn't struggle with sex. You know, I read enough church history and regular history to know, yep, people have always been sinners. They've always had sexual sin. What I think is unique is the degree to which publicly it is just accepted. Mm-hmm. And I think because it seems so otherworldly, I mean, you think, come on, that's PG-13? Mm-hmm. I'm 25 years old. I can see this. And by the time you've taken it in for 10 years, you just don't even notice what you're seeing. But it's just, you know, I said in that talk too, it's like, you know, if you're at the beach and you're with all your Christian friends and, you know, just from the guy's perspective, and you see some, you know, attractive woman dressed, you know, not as Focus would have her dress. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you said, hey, guys, you want to just watch her run on the beach? Guys would say, what are you, pervert? Mm-hmm. But, hey, let's go do that in the dark on a 3-story screen and pay money for it. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Let's do that. And then we'll come home and we'll listen to Third Day on the car ride mm-hmm. home. And there's just a huge disconnect, especially in this area of sexuality. And probably, you know, a lot of it probably is so many people and not to be the shame police, but it's just the reality of how many people from 13, 14, 15 are into pornography. Mm-hmm. And so if you're into that and you go to PG-13, I mean, that's like the Waltons.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So another thing that you are pretty hardcore about, you addressed actually on Sunday when I heard you preach in church, and you basically did a survey of Mark mm-hmm. and really what it means to have compassion and how Jesus did this and how to also proclaim the gospel in the midst of that. And I think what you were saying is that too often we're trying to take one or the other in our culture and even in the church, where it's like, well, you know, we have to give people all this compassion and stuff, but it's like we don't want to sell, quote unquote, sell Jesus alongside of it. You know, like the two can be separated. But you're saying that really the whole purpose of everything that we do, and some may want to call it social justice, some may want to call it whatever, the end goal is to proclaim the name of Christ. So why, again, I just ask you the same question for every single thing. Why aren't we doing that? What's up with that?
Well,
why do you have to preach that sermon?
Yeah, well, it's really complicated, and it deals with a lot of distinctions that I think Christians don't make. For example, the calling of the individual versus the mission of the church. You know, if you go to medical school and you're a doctor, you ought to be a great doctor and you ought to help sick people get better. Mm-hmm. You don't have to apologize for that. You don't have to feel like, well, you know, I saved somebody's life in surgery, but I didn't share the gospel. That's your calling. Mm-hmm. Now, the church, as the church, God's people, as an organism, as an institution, I think there are a unique set of marching orders, because there is no other organization in the world that will do what the church is called to do. So the church may mobilize to help out, you know, fire victims and when houses are burned down. Certainly any churches here, you know, in that fire should be doing things to help their neighbors. That's just part of showing the love of Christ. And yet, if you said, you know what, our identity as a church is we are just helping victims of natural disasters, I would say, you know, that may be a good calling for you, and maybe some of your Christian friends want to start a group that does this, but the church here is to proclaim Christ, is to call people to faith in Jesus. And that's what I was trying to show from Mark, that Jesus certainly had compassion on people who were hurting, and so should we. And yet the whole driving force of Mark's gospel and of his ministry is always to the end that he's pushing home his own unique identity and calling people to faith in repentance. And I think we're nervous about that. And you probably got some Christians that are just nervous about helping people. That seems liberal. We don't want that. But on the other hand, I think a whole lot of young Christians in our generation feel like, well, if I do homeless shelters and sex trafficking and dig wells, well, that's good. And everyone will pat you on the back for that. But what about telling people about Jesus? I mean, it's much easier to get young people to go on a mission trip, quote unquote, to go help poor people than to go on a mission trip that's going to evangelize. That's just much harder and more controversial.
Mm-hmm. And so the antidote for that beyond the, I mean, because again, we're talking to Christians here. Are we just talking apathy? Are we talking, I mean, just a misunderstanding of really our relationship with Christ, what that looks like? I mean, why do we get so fired up about wells?
Wells, for good reasons. We care about people. Mm-hmm. We should care about people. I think there's a sense that evangelicals have not paid as much attention to these in previous generations. So there's some helpful corrective there. I think we also have to be honest that it's easier to do things that Angelina Jolie is going to be happy about, or mm-hmm. Bono, or, you know, though we wouldn't say they're the people we're doing it for, but just kind of the world mm-hmm. celebrates mm-hmm. that. If a Starbucks has a campaign for it and we do it, then we look like good people, mm-hmm. and that's fine. But what about abortion? What about some of these other social issues that are less popular or more controversial? Mm-hmm. And I guess to answer the question, I'm kind of rattling on, but I think one of the things we need as ballast in our boat, really, is the doctrine of hell. Mm-hmm. And I think when push comes to shove, a lot of evangelicals are pretty squishy on that. If we really have that as a ballast, which keeps our boat afloat and steady, we have to realize that we want to care for all kinds of suffering, but especially eternal suffering, especially mm-hmm. suffering that's going to last forever. And if we really, really have that doctrine, it ought to steel our resolve to proclaiming Christ and not only digging wells.
Mm-hmm. We just interviewed Randy Alcorn, and I know he mm-hmm. Endorsed certainly the hole in our holiness. And I just remember him saying, you know, Lisa, you have to remember that where we are right now, this is the closest some people are ever going to get to heaven. And to just recognize mm. that, you know, really, I mean, from here, it's heaven or hell. And, you know, I think we're just so, especially young adults, have this idea, you know, but not too many think they're, you know, invincible, or that they're, you know, just have all life ahead of them or whatever. But I think it's certainly back of mind, you know, and I think that kind of, I don't know, it just kind of doesn't do a lot to steal the resolve.
Right. Well, you know, there's a line from C.S. Lewis where, you know, he was saying, you know, the objection is all of this Christianity stuff and is just pie in the sky, and mm-hmm. we got to be feet on the ground. And he said, well, but the question is whether there is really pie in the sky or not. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if there is pie in the sky, he's saying if there is an eternity, then these things have even more value. Not at all to say that the other things don't matter, but we can't lose sight and perspective of how long eternity is and how short our time on earth really is.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of hell, in a few minutes that we yes. have remaining, as we so often
good
do,
segue.
You know, it's just sit down and you're like, you know, hell, whatever. No, you have become kind of the go-to guy, it seems, in the church, and certainly among reformers, certainly the out of the gate, you know, with the Gospel Coalition, for which Kevin blogs, check it out, Gospel Coalition, in crafting responses to a number of things that are going on in our culture.
Smackdown guy?
Yeah. No, I'm usually the Smackdown person, so this is so great. It's okay. Like a kindred spirit.
Yeah,
this is great.
Great.
But you have a little more of a platform than I do, I think. But you have crafted some pretty lengthy and pretty reasoned and pretty in-depth whether rebuttals and or explorations and or, you know, just commentaries on a number of things going on, one being Rob Bell's mm-hmm. Love Wins. I mean, I think that one really kind of everything burst yeah. onto the forefront with that. And then you had a response, kind of a back and forth a little bit with mm-hmm. Jefferson Bethke mm-hmm. Related to his Why I Love Jesus, but Not Religion. And I actually had him on the show, and I asked him, one of the first things I asked him was, so what did it feel like to get contacted by Kevin DeYoung? And he said, I was so upset because I look up to him and I wanted him to like my piece. But he was very
We've gotten together since then and had some good talks.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. So he was just a really neat guy, and uh-huh. we talked a lot about his teachability and really yep. how that exchange went. But yep. how did you land in this role? What is this? And are you just like are you just sitting at the ready to like see? I mean, you're just finding out what's going on and what people are saying. And
oh yeah, I just comb through Twitter like a police feed and I just find where bad guys are.
Exactly.
And I just have ammo uh-huh. ready.
Uh-huh.
I got a blog
post. You have
a
working list of 10 things.
Yeah.
If someone writes on this, I'm
ready. Just in case.
Yeah.
You know, I got a couple of focus pieces. I got just, you know, something goes wrong.
You better check out boundless.org.
Yeah,
there's all
just
kinds
hits
of
in.
Fodder for who knows what there.
No, I don't relish that role. I really don't. It's a combination of things. One, Doug Wilson once said that, someone said, why do you blog? He said, I blog to make the voices in my head go away, which is probably why I do it. I didn't know that I'd ever have a platform like this, but I get things and I read things and think and I think, somebody's got to say something. And there's people who are smarter than me and more well-read and better scholars. I think what maybe I can do, people often say, I thought something wasn't quite right, but I didn't know how to say it. And so hopefully that serves a purpose in the church. And hopefully if people read my blog every day, they would realize, you know, there's Monday morning humor. That's usually what people come up. I love mm-hmm. your blog, the funny clips. it's not all smackdowns. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of just Bible exposition. But from time to time, there are these engagements with different issues. And really, I talk about them when people from my church ask me about them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how the Rob Bell thing, I mean, he's from Michigan. I grew up in the town he was a pastor in, and mm-hmm. he grew up in the town I'm a pastor in, and it literally, I think, everyone in Michigan I talked to in churches knew mm-hmm. somebody who went to Robsville. So it was just a huge issue, crying mm-hmm. out for a response. Same thing, I had no idea the Jeff Bethke thing was going on, but people from my church, I started seeing it on Facebook, and people would ask, hey, everyone's talking about this, what do you think about it? So when I get that, I feel like it really comes out of my role as a pastor and my desire to shepherd, and first of all with my church. So things, you know, I don't comment on things generally that don't seem to be any sort of issues in my church or with people that I'm aware of, but when they're there, I feel like that's part of teaching, is to correct and reprove and instruct, and hopefully I'm open to that when I need it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was actually going to ask, so who's your SmackDown person? What do you have as your, you know,
who smacks me down?
Yeah, who comes to you and is like, what did you write? Because that was crazy. If it
my
ever happens.
My wife? No.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
No, but she's good to keep me humble. You know, I have a really good elder board that will be honest with me if they think something's out of line. And what some people may not realize is, you know, almost every controversial kind of blog post like that, certainly the ones you mentioned, I mean, I'm sending them out to friends of mine ahead of time to say, what do you think about this? And can you give me feedback? And have standing relationship with a number of guys, names that you would recognize, to say, hey, if you ever see anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I've emailed Justin Taylor before and said, hey, that post, you might want to think about changing this. And he's done the same thing mm-hmm. to me. And of course, there are older guys that, you know, like a John Piper, if I'm with him, you know, he's not afraid to smack down people.
He's not. You know, I went to Bethlehem Baptist when I lived in Minneapolis. Yeah. And, yeah. He can be terrifying. I'm just going to be honest. So, you know, in a good way.
He is very godly, and he's just like that.
Yeah.
In real life.
He's a neat guy. Okay, I'm going to ask you one more question. It's totally a departure of everything we've been talking about.
Okay.
Because you pastor a church that is in a university town.
Yes.
You have lots of young adults in your church. And I know that you are very passionate about observing and commenting and mentoring towards this whole dating culture, moving into marriage, and where we are going with this. What do you tell the young adults in your church? What is your church doing to help young adults honor marriage where they are right now and move towards marriage if, in fact, it's God's plan for them?
We could probably
be doing...
Do you just
have a committee for that?
Yeah, we have the matchmaker committee, Yeldas, going around. As you know, it's a hard thing, and it's a hard kind of slice of life in the church. The churches don't often know what to do with. So, I mean, we have some Bible studies and groups and things to try to bring people together, just to provide fellowship. We certainly do better with college ministry because we have a lot of staff for that and really, I think, do pretty well with that. Once you get out of college and if you're not married for a time, that becomes more difficult. Honestly, one of the main things is I try to speak to men. I mean, I've blogged about that and just do something, so I don't want to beat the horse, but I just think it is a large problem with men. And I'm just dealing anecdotally that I see when I speak places, I see in my church, I see in other churches, I see godly, mature, capable 25 to 35 to 40 year old women. I think, guys, what are you doing? And if anything, I'm trying to sound that note for guys to grow up, for guys to have a little ambition. I don't know, you could answer the question better than I can. What I hear from a lot of single women is, guys, can you be a man? I mean, I'm not looking for like the Stetson hat and, you know, you arm wrestle alligators or something, but just you're kind of going somewhere. You're well, just do something. So whenever I have the opportunity to try to exhort men in that way, not just to, you know, beat up on men and, you're so stupid and you play Mario Kart and whatever. They don't play that anymore. That's what I played, but I'm dated. So I think they really need to see the call in their lives and that 25-year-olds used to do more than what 25-year-olds do now. And just the sort of patterns that some of them get into of vacillation and indecision don't help serve the cause of Christ or make for godly marriages.
Okay. All right. Well, Kevin, thanks so much for being part of this conversation. Again, as I said before, Kevin blogs at the Gospel Coalition through his own blog as well. His new book is called The Hole in Our Holiness. I also referenced Just Do Something. If you haven't read that, definitely check it out. And it's just great to have you have ties to this town so we can see you once in a while.
It's a great place.
But you know what we're going to do? We're going to stage. I'm going to tell Martha to get on this. We're going to put together a boundless camping trip. And we're going to have Martha shaking her head no either. She's not a camper. We're going to put, you have to read the first part of The Hole in Our Holiness to understand this. But we're going to put together a boundless camping trip. And Kevin is going to come with his family. And he's going to speak for us. And we'll put you in a tent.
Yeah, thank you.
It's going to be awesome. Tent with one of those showers that hangs from a tree.
Oh, wonderful.
Pots and pans in a Rubbermaid tub.
Let's do real life, but harder.
Exactly.
Jim Gaffigan said, you know why my parents didn't take me camping? Because they loved me.
Yeah. Exactly. So, Kevin DeYoung, everyone. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, great to be here. Is like you, Lord, in all the earth. Matchless love and beauty. Endless word, but nothing in this world will satisfy. Jesus, you're the cup that won't run dry. Your presence is heaven to me.
Everyone, you've been with us for the show thus far, and now we are finishing up with our inbox segment, welcoming Danny Huerta back to the table. Hey, Danny.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
I know, it's been a while. You had to earn your stripes again before we were willing to let you come back.
Yeah, so. It invited me in a while, so I was feeling a little hurt by that.
I appreciate the shirt color, though. That's very, it's very bright and inspiring.
Yeah, it's definitely
end of summer.
I don't know. It definitely is bright.
It's good. Mm-hmm. I like it. Okay, well, you're going to answer a question for us. It's a pretty short question, but kind of a deep one, because really it's not just like a little tactical three steps to whatever. So you're going to have to put your thinking cap on for this. Mm. Our listener says, both my girlfriend and I are convicted that we desire each other more than we desire Christ in our lives. How do we practically fight that to ensure Jesus is exalted higher than each other?
Well, this is a really tough topic, because desiring one another is something that God wired us with. It's not a bad thing, yet it's something that needs balance to it. I remember my son one time, I brought it with me, the saying that he said, it was about a couple of years ago, he said, I try to do what's right, Dad, and I don't want to say mean things to kids. I like my friend, but my head is telling me to say mean things, but I tell it no. And the important part that my son said is, God can vacuum my heart. He can get a washcloth and wash it clean. And his concept of God is, he trusts God that he can do anything, mm-hmm. right? And so in this situation, I'm wondering what the relationship really is like with Jesus and the way they're setting themselves up when they're on dates. You can really set yourself up for sexual encounters in dates. If you're by yourselves and it's 11 o'clock at night and you're cuddled up watching a movie, it probably sets you up for some type of physical contact. Now, if you're out bowling, you're out in the public, you're probably not going to do that. So I would say being smart about where you're at, and at the same time not going to shame because you're not exalting God higher over the desires, recognizing that desires are driven by biochemistry in our bodies, and we're designed that way to have dopamine surge, mm-hmm. the same as if we're using cocaine. So it's a very big surge of dopamine. Making sure together as a couple, you're looking for times to connect in different ways, and also in your relationship with Christ. Maybe reading a book together. I love Renovation of the Heart or Love by the Parrots. Those are good books in preparation for marriage. Anatomy of the Soul by Kurt Thompson. Those can be good ones to especially Anatomy of the Soul and Renovation of the Heart, to strengthen the relationship with Christ and at the same time preparing yourself for marriage.
Yeah, and it seems here that they've given the, they kind of use the verbiage of, you know, exalting one another, which kind of, you know, tends towards making me think of idolatry and kind of setting one another up, which can happen even apart from a physical relationship. And I think if they've gone there emotionally and in their minds, then it's easier then to take it into a physical. And I think that, you know, we often think of that as, I just wish I loved Jesus more, but he's kind of not tangible. He's not here. And this person is. And so do you kind of see that as being an issue for couples? Like if they focus in on one another too much, they can kind of lose sight of the bigger picture?
Yeah, it's more of an emotional need that they're trying to meet through the other person. Mm-hmm. And usually that's more of an ambivalent type of attachment where you're unsure, am I worth something, am I not? And this person's reaffirming my worth. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to become attached to them and almost cling to them for life because they're making me feel better about myself. And so you have to watch out. What's going on inside of me? Why am I exalting this person so high? What purpose are they serving in my life? And can I be selfless in this and begin to be secure in who I am? Mm-hmm. Because then you'll have a real good relationship with Christ. And really, ultimately, the way we treat God in our relationship is how we're going to treat others. So if you strengthen the intimacy with Christ, you'll actually strengthen the intimacy with people and you'll feel more connected.
Yeah. Well, and strengthening that intimacy with Christ, because the one thing we know is that people will ultimately fail us. So if this person has not yet, that will come. And if you've set them up as kind of the be-all, end-all, that's not going to go well.
Right. And the secure attachment, you just kind of said part of the definition of secure attachment, which is what we all can earn and get to. And that's holding people with an open hand. Mm-hmm. Just being able to say, I love you, want to be with you, realize that if you leave me, it's not something necessarily personal. It's your own journey. And I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. So being able to put people where they need to be so that they can truly feel loved and you can feel love as well.
Good. Yeah. Well, wise words, Danny. Thanks so much for weighing in on that question. Hey, everyone, write to us at editor@boundless.org if you have a question for us to answer in the future. We would love to do that. We love bringing in people like Danny and our other counselors and those who can respond to stuff like this from their own not only experience, but obviously expertise. Danny's part
and
of
with bright shirts,
team.
Right? And,
well,
Lisa?
Exactly. That's becoming one of our prerequisites. Right. So to be able to do that, don't forget, we also have a counseling department here at Focus on the Family, focusonthefamily.com. You can find forums that we have as well as a direct way to reach our counseling department, as well as calling 1-800 the letter A and the word family, and our team there can get you resources and direct you to counseling if in fact you would like that specifically. So that is it for this week's show. We loved hearing from Kevin DeYoung and of course our little roundup of the podcast. You are our audience and we want to hear from you and we want to get your feedback because quite frankly you're the people that we talk to every week. Let's be honest. So that's it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the Family.